Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Good morning, folks. My name is Martin Shields. I'm a certified financial planner and wealth manager at Boucher Financial Group. And I'm going to be your host today for Let's Talk Money. I'm sitting in for my colleague, Steve Boucher, and it's great to give him a break and to be here with you on this nice fall morning. Yesterday was a great fall day. It's great to have some of this warm weather to get out there and enjoy some activities. But it's great to be here with you to answer any questions you may have regarding your financial planning and investment management concerns. And I encourage you to call in with those questions. You can reach me at 1-800-TALK-WTY. That's 800-825-5949. Again, 800-825-5949. And we have a special guest on the show today. We have many new colleagues that have joined in the last 6 months. And you know, I talked on the show yesterday about how fortunate we are to have such talented folks. It's great to me from a team perspective. They just you know, provide so much support and really great guidance to our clients. And it's just a dynamic group of folks that we have. But one of them is Jason Alonzo. He joined us about a little over a month ago, and he came up from JP Morgan, where he was down in New York City with them for over 20 years. And very talented individual and a great person as well. So it's great to have him on the show. Jason, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Marty. Thanks for the kind words, and it's great to be with you and the listeners this morning.
Great. Now, I know we want to kind of just go through a few topics, but you got a big event this morning when you're done here. You're going to be watching the Jets game over in London. Is that correct?
That's correct. It shows that I've been able to take the pain for 43 years and have been able to stick with the team. So I'm able to stick through a lot of the tough times, not only in investing, but watching football as well.
Hey, listen, maybe this is a turning point this year for them, right?
They could get two in a row this week, so we're keeping our fingers crossed.
Okay, good. It should be fun to watch them over in London playing. Who are they playing?
Atlanta.
Okay, so it should be a good game. So good. Well, I appreciate you joining us. And Jason is our portfolio manager, and again, he really helps drive our investment process. Really a talented guy, just have an ability to understand the macro themes and kind of what's going on in the market. And, you know, with our portfolio management, what we're looking to do is, you know, identify areas within the economy and market that we think we can overweight or underweight particular asset classes and sectors and add value to our clients' portfolio. And again, Jason's done a great job doing that. And, you know, as we discussed before the show, you got a number of things that have come out. You got fairly weak labor numbers that came out for the month of September. Yeah, the 10-year U.S. Treasury moving up to 1.6%. And, you know, certainly a lot of supply chain issues that are occurring. And so I think, you know, some real concerns with inflation. Why don't you share with the listeners what your perspective is with where we stand right now?
Sure. Thanks, Marty. Well, let's just start with inflation. Inflation's been a topic that's been discussed quite a bit here in the press and the media in the last weeks and months, and it's something that I think is going to stick with us for a while. But just to kind of take a step back, you know, inflation is normally a good thing. Policymakers actually target around a 2% inflation, so they want to see moderate inflation because, you know, as inflation gives consumers or individuals the incentive of buying now instead of waiting for lower prices later, and that supports economic activity. What we've seen as we've opened up or reopened from the pandemic was that during the pandemic, a lot of things shut down, whether it be your restaurants, your retailers, or a lot of the, you know, manufacturing facilities that would have production to support other businesses. And, you know, as the economy reopened, you know, consumer balance sheets were in largely good shape, not all of them, but overall, as, you know, they had gotten government assistance, which was required to get through. And companies had to reopen to, you know, meet the surging demand that we've seen globally as the economy reopened. And they had to rush to buy inventory and goods to support their business operations. And not only that, to hire people back that, you know, they'd lost, that had not worked during the pandemic. And there was a lot of demand and not enough supply to meet some of these, you know, for the hiring. We've seen restaurant owners now just paying people to just interview. So that's what I would call wage inflation. And obviously good for the, you know, the person that's working, bad for the restaurant owner. And there's a lot of money chasing after those few goods that were produced during the pandemic as things were shut down. So that's what we've seen. We've seen different pockets of inflation. And, you know, from us at Boucher, we want to try to understand, you know, how we can position our portfolios to mitigate the negative effects on inflation. And that's what we're trying to do here.
Yes. And so, you know, we've talked about this, you know, probably one of the more challenging parts of the portfolio with the concerns over and also just if the economy is opening back up is the bond allocation, right? So, you know, higher inflation from a historical perspective tends to lead to higher interest rates. And certainly as the economy strengthens between the monthly bond purchases that the Fed has been doing at about $120 billion a clip, and then keeping interest rates low, you know, you've got a situation where as those rates rise, you know, the value of bond allocations that we've seen this year are going to be negative while you have stocks being positive. So it's really going to be something that we kind of continue to look at as to what we do from an investment perspective.
Yeah, yeah. So right, as you allude to, you know, where bonds have been priced and given the outlook for inflation, they're not priced attractive right here. So when you look at the bond position and what they provide in an overall portfolio, they typically provide stability. I mean, and that's what you're looking for there. You're looking for stability and you're looking for income. And what we're looking for is trying to find ways to get those things. There are some high dividend paying securities that, you know, could provide you that income with, you're trying to look for things that are providing that income where you're having a low overall correlation or a diversifier from your equity portfolio. So, you know, things such as market neutral strategies are some of the things we're looking at, or looking for equities with some downside protection where you're protected on the first 5 or 10%. There are some structured products that do that and structured solutions. So given our where bonds have been priced, not now and for some time, but given the outlook for, you know, inflation to be with us for some time, it's more important to look for other areas that can provide the stability and the income in the overall portfolio. And that's what we've tried to do here in my short time here.
Yeah, absolutely. You've been great helping the team provide that guidance. Now, one of the areas we've talked about a little bit, we have an extra allocation into the energy sector. And, you know, it's interesting because with all the discussion of, alternative energy sources, and really that's, you know, the direction that our country is going, I think even globally, but it's still a long ways before we get to that type of, full energy sources working effectively. And that, you know, really, the basic energy areas like oil and natural gas are still in a position to do well, in part, as we discussed, because of the lack of investment in those areas that you've seen. Why don't you speak a little bit to what that thesis is?
Yeah, so what we've seen now is low stockpiles across Europe and the U.S. The EIA, which is the U.S. Energy Information Administration, recently reported the lowest levels for heating oil in the U.S. since 2000. I've recently seen trends in Europe showing the lowest stockpiles in over a decade. And again, this is similar to what we've there's two things I think that are pointing to this. One, you know, we've seen, again, the strong demand for better than expected demand for jets and, you know, freight trucks across the U.S. supporting the economic activity has come back strong. And we've also seen, you know, again, with reduced production, I saw an article in The Economist in the last week and a half, showing the capital expenditure outlays or production where we're investing our assets across several industries. And the energy sector stuck out here. So In fiscal year 20, the investment into the energy sector was down 30%, according to Bloomberg and The Economist. And they're expecting fiscal year 21 and 22 for them to be down 25% versus 2019 levels. And I think that this is a kind of a longer term trend where we've all talked about, you know, us as a population getting to the new green future, having a cleaner energy, obviously, with the effects it has on the globe. And what we've seen here is a shift in energy investment away from what has been fueling our day-to-day lives now, and more trying to get us to, you know, where we want to be in the future. And that transition is bumpy, and I think that's what we're going to have a balance between the fuel that provides our, you know, heating and our economic activity today versus the handoff to where we're going to be, you know, some time from now. And that can get a little bumpy. And I think that's also playing into some of this within the energy sector now, is there just hasn't been that investment, at least in the last couple of years. And now I look for what estimates are for the next few. And, you know, this might be something that, you know, we'll figure out a way to balance it. But I think that might be playing into, you know, some of the lower stockpiles that we've had at this time.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, which makes sense when you think about it. I mean, you know, these industries, they tend to move not too quickly, right? Meaning that, you know, they start, it's like a big ship. So they start changing. And in the last 2 years, they've been pivoting because there was kind of an excess of oil and supplies. And they've been pivoting to less capital investment, especially during the COVID lockdown. And now we're on the other side of that. The pendulum swung, so that you know, it's you've got an industry where really you know, it supports much higher oil prices, potentially greater margins in that area. And again, probably over the next 2 years or so, it'll start pivoting back. And you know, I do think, listen, you can't look at everything that whether it be car manufacturers or other sectors and not say that we're going to be moving to alternative energy sources, you know, over the future. But, you know, you can't have that change occur overnight. You know, it requires just billions, if not trillions of dollars of investment, both for the energy sources, for the batteries, and for the transmission. And so there are definitely going to be opportunities where, from an investment perspective, you see some of this dislocation that provides really kind of great opportunities to enter these sectors. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the good thing about this article, we've read articles or have heard about some of the supply shortages in semiconductors. The interesting thing in 2020, semiconductors had been, that the CapEx in that industry was down in double digits, but we've heard about these shortages. And again, as we adapt and try to figure out a balance for the next 2 years with these shortages, we've all reacted, and those are semiconductor CapEx is supposed to be up 25%. So, you know, they're one of the effects of this could be some renewed investment into the energy sector, depending on how these shortages play out. But again, we as humans will balance and see where the opportunity is and where the demand is. And I think we'll react to this.
Great. One last thing before we go to break. Explain your thoughts on kind of where we stand with, you know, COVID, with the Delta variant, and kind of reconnecting from there as far as, you know, the economy opening up and, you know, what you see in that regard.
Great. Yeah. So, we've seen strong demand from the beginning of the year that was interrupted this summer as we've had the Delta variant. So we were making progress as the vaccine was rolling out. The economy was reopening pretty strongly. And then, you know, the Delta variant, particularly in August, had really slowed down a lot of economic activity, had a weaker than expected jobs report. And, you know, that makes sense. I mean, we're still trying to, as I like to say, feel our way around a dark room with the COVID variant, the COVID virus. But so as the Delta variant, and you're looking at, I'm looking at the 7-day change in new cases, that peaked around the second week of September. And although we are still having new cases, our new cases are coming in less and less every week. So it seems that, you know, we're having decelerating growth as far as new COVID cases. And, you know, given that this was the key determinant to really upsetting economic activity from the consumer side in August, I would expect, you know, right around the second week of September, and we started seeing the change in data, we started to see that economic activity pick up as the Delta change in cases started to recede. So this gives me, you know, really positive feeling going into the fourth quarter, as I'd expect this data to continue to decelerate and us to get a better handle on the Delta variant and COVID in general, and economic activity to pick up where we saw it in, you know, the early, late spring, early summer months, which was very buoyant.
Great. Well, Jason, I appreciate your perspective, and I appreciate you coming on the show here. It's great to, again, have you on board and helping drive our investment process. And you do a great job of taking complex topics and making them very understandable. So thanks again for coming on, and go Jets.
Thanks, Mario. Great to be here. I'll talk to you guys all soon.
You got it. So, yeah, I tell you, folks, you know, I've been with the firm for 10 years now. And, you know, when we're able to have really talented folks like Jason and a lot of other individuals that we've added to our team, it just, from my perspective, it's just what a dynamic and really vibrant work environment. But for our clients, it's invaluable as well. And, you know, that's very important. We're going to go to a commercial break, but come back and join us as we continue discussion and we take your questions. You're listening to Let's Talk Money on News Radio WGY 103.1 FM and 810 AM. Welcome back, folks. For those of you just joining us, my name is Martin Shields. I'm your host today for Let's Talk Money. I'm sitting in for my colleague, Stephen Boucher. And I hope you're doing well on this fine Sunday morning. Again, it's great to have some good weather. The forecast that was out earlier this week, it looked like it was going to be rainy today, but it doesn't look like it's going to be the case. So we can get out there and enjoy this day. Yesterday after the show, I went up to Potash Mountain. It's up towards Queensbury. You go up 9N coming out. Well, you can go either coming out of Lake George 9N or you come out of Saratoga and Greenfield. And I'm telling you, a great little hike, about 3 miles round trip, great views, so well maintained. I think there's a few groups up there that in the Lake Luzerne area who maintain it, and just really well maintained. Great way to kind of get out there and do a hike and, you know, get some great views. And as you get up to the top of the mountain, you really see that we're getting pretty close to peak foliage with the leaves. So it's great to be able to see that. So nice little thing. So hopefully, again, you're going to be able to get out there today and enjoy it, and really appreciate where we stand right now with fall season. And then, you know, I mentioned on the show yesterday, this piece that I saw on ESPN Game Day about Ryan Day. He's the head coach of the Ohio State football team. And I think it's important enough. I want to mention it again today, and also in part because today is International Mental Health Day. And really what that segment was about was Ryan Day's father committed suicide back around when he was a kid. So it's about 25 years ago. And he just talked about the stigma that existed with that. And he really never mentioned it, and really kind of always hid it. And then more recently, when he took the job as the Ohio State football coach and he was recruiting, he was seeing as he was going to the high schools how much of an epidemic it is with suicide in high schools. And, you know, he basically came out and said, you know what, this is a problem. I've got to speak out about my situation and let people know about, you know, that it's not a stigma, that it's something that needs to be talked about, that it's mental health, it's a, you know, it's a health issue, and that we need to, if you're having that, those issues, we need to talk about them. And, you know, I just thought it was really impressive that this individual came out and is opening up about his own personal situation to help others. And, you know, one of our taglines or things that we talk about with clients is it's health, wealth for life. And, you know, we talk about the importance of wealth, meaning that you've got to make sure that you're doing all the right things. But first before that comes health. And certainly physical health is important, but mental health is as important. And so for all of our listeners out there, and certainly for all of our clients, you know, just make sure that you're aware of, you know, where you stand with your mental health, and also any friends or family that you're looking out for them. Because if you see signs of an issue with somebody, you know, you need to have the conversation, and you need to let them know that, you know, that you want to be there for them, that they, you know, if they're struggling at all, they need to be able to talk with you and get professional help. And I just think it's so important. So I just want to highlight that again for everybody. But definitely want to move on to some financial planning and investment management topics. And I encourage you to call in with any questions you may have. And you can reach me at 800-TALK-WGY. That's 800-825-5949. Again, 800-825-5949. So call in with any financial planning or investment management questions you may have. So a number of items I want to talk about. One is, I was reading an article about in the Wall Street Journal about home appraisals. And what's happening is, as the housing market has heated up, there have been a number of cases where home appraisals have not come in to support the purchase price. And that can be a real problem, because if there's a difference between the purchase price and the appraisal, the buyer needs to come up with that cash to cover that difference, or they need to come with a different price that meets that appraisal. And the reason I bring this up is, you know, I think certainly having an appraisal system is important to try to prevent housing prices from getting away. And that's really what happened in 07, 08, is the appraisal got very, process got very weak, and kind of was whatever appraisal you want, we'll match it at that. But I will have to say that we refinanced our mortgage on our house, and it was appraised. And it really didn't matter too much, because we weren't selling the house. We just needed to get it, you know, in a reasonable ballpark. But what I found, you know, the process that was used by the appraiser, and I understand it, right? It's very systematic. It's looking at, you know, exact numbers as far as square feet and number of rooms, all these things that, you know, pretty a systematic approach to it. But when I saw that the houses that they were comparing them to, you know, we're in a neighborhood, and it's got an element of a kind of charm or nicety to it, to the extent that, you know, you have kids and whatever. And, you know, they're comparing to a house that's way out in the country, that, you know, it was a nice house, but like, it was not in the type of neighborhood we were, or even to a house that was across the street from us, which is a great house, but just the way that the yard is set up and everything, that it doesn't work very well. You know, it is kind of amazing. So I would really, you know, if you're going to be selling your home, make sure you're prepared to kind of help the appraiser. And this is what it said in the article, is if you can guide the appraiser, find comps that you think support your house, you know, I would really encourage you to do that, and not just say, well, hey, whatever the appraiser comes back with, that's what we're going to have to deal with, because I think you're going to find yourself in a tough spot if you take that approach. So I would really, you know, kind of, if you're ready to do that, get prepared for it. Well, folks, we're going to go to commercial break, but come back and join us as we continue the discussion. You're listening to Let's Talk Money on News Radio WGY, 103.1 FM, 810 AM. Come back and join us, folks.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome back, folks. My name is Martin Shields, and I'm your host today for Let's Talk Money. It's great to be here with you on this Sunday morning to answer any questions you may have. And it's great to give my colleague Stephen Boucher a well-deserved break. And you can reach me here at 800-TALK-WGY. That's 800-825-5949 with any questions you may have regarding your financial planning or investment management concerns. And I want to go through some things that we discuss with our clients and the guidance we give them. And, you know, in these discussions we have with them, you know, as I hear just, you know, kind of questions in the Wall Street Journal or different investment media, you know, kind of what our take is to help our clients get through, you know, periods of time in retirement and make sure that they're properly protected. So, you know, with any of our clients, we do a lot of planning with them. As we've talked about, we're our client's personal CFO, and we're really kind of going through in a number of different areas to make sure that they're prepared, whether it be estate planning, tax planning, insurance reviews, you know, anything that relates to their financial situation, we're going to have that discussion. But one of them is, you know, kind of a cash flow planning with retirement. And one of the things we do with this is when we're looking at the cash flow that our clients need, you know, a couple of things. One of a lot of times we're discussing this before they are actually in retirement. So we're talking about them building a budget and kind of making sure that they're really understanding what their spending is, because that's important. It's really, you need to have that guidance. But then the other elements are, we basically, as they move forward with that cash flow, once they get that in place, we have a 3% inflation factor every year. So all that means is we're bumping up their spending by 3%. And that really has been above the historical average for the last, let's say, 20 years. So it's a little bit more robust. And if we were to hit a high inflationary environment and sustained inflationary environment, we would actually bump that up more. But, you know, one of the things it does is really kind of protects our clients as kind of inflation is out there and they need more spending for day-to-day items. But the other thing it does is it provides protection if they need kind of one-time expenses. And even though we give guidance to our clients that, hey, you need to be thinking about when you build out that budget, making sure that you've got money to cover those one-time expenditures, quite often they maybe don't capture it accurate enough. And, you know, they need a new roof, they need a new furnace, they have a medical issue. And by having that 3% factor in there, not only does it cover for concerns from inflation and just day-to-day prices going up, but it also does a great job of covering these one-time expenses. And, you know, whether it be $10,000, $20,000, or $30,000, whatever that number is, from a planning perspective, as we look at that, it really does make sure that they're properly protected. And I will tell you that it's going to happen. You know, I'm Irish. I believe in Murphy's Law. Whatever can happen will happen. And it does, without a doubt, it absolutely happens. And again, our goal as the investment fiduciary for our clients is to make sure they're protected. So that's where it's so important. Well, we're going to go to the phone lines, and we have Susie from New Hampshire. Susie, you there?
Hello.
Hi, Susie. How you doing?
Good.
What can I help you with?
Well, I have a real estate related question. I have an investment property that I could sell and end up with, let's just say, $75,000, but give up rental income of, say, let's just say $500 a month.
Okay.
But I don't have any cash. So am I better off keeping the rental property with the monthly income or having the cash?
So, first of all, are you in a situation where you need a sizable amount of cash?
Not really.
Okay. And then how is it with the rental property? I mean, is it something that you are fine managing, or is it kind of a pain in the neck? What is your thoughts on that regard?
No, it's fine managing.
Okay. So, and you're getting $500 a month. Is that net of any expenses?
That would be net.
Net.
Let's just
okay.
say, even if it was 400, I mean, let's lower it. Let's say it was 300 or 400
okay.
a month.
Okay. And you think you're going to clear $75,000 by selling it?
Yes.
Okay. So right now, if you're taking it, you know, let's say 400 a month, so 4,800 a year, and that's a net number. And then, you know, if you were to just kind of look at what your kind of rate of return or just, you know, kind of your profit rate on that for that income coming in is around 6.4%. So, you know, it's one of those things where if you were to take that $75,000 and invest it in a diversified portfolio, you're going to get about that same amount. You know, and I'm being conservative with that, but, you know, if you look at historical returns, you're probably going to be higher. But if you say, hey, even net of taxes, let's just say you're going to be about the same amount. So this is what I would tell you, which is, you know, if you're going to have rental real estate, you know, unless it's something that this is like kind of your area of focus, you really should be making a lot more money than 6.4%. Right. And I don't know if you can bump that up or not, you know, as far as the rents that you're paying or whatever, because, you know, usually it requires work on your end and also you investing money to keep the rental unit up to par. So, you know, and when we have clients that start talking about going into rental real estate, you know, I always say if you're not getting 10 to 15% type of distribution rate or rate of return on that asset, you're probably not getting compensated for the time that you put in. And so, and also again, the additional money that you need to put in as far as keeping the rental unit up to par. So, you know, my general recommendation would be if you could take that and get the $75,000, you're better doing that and investing it in a diversified portfolio than probably keeping the rental unit.
Interesting. I've never heard that 10 to 15%. That's very interesting. Because you also have to account for mental wellness, right? Worry and concern about a property. Also, this property is an old farmhouse, so it's something that, you know, may need upkeep, as you said, and then you've got to get the people to do the work, and you know it's a battle to get stuff done these days. So cash is king, as my friend says.
Yeah. No, let's face it. You know, this is kind of a real estate market, things are selling a little bit higher. And, you know, again, we've got some clients that they really focus in on rental real estate. And this is where, you know, what part of their kind of part-time or retirement job is. And it works for them. But I don't think quite often enough people really take into consideration, you know, all the kind of cost that you like your time and everything else that have to go into real estate. So, no, I think that's, you know, a pretty clear situation where you're probably better off selling it.
Great. Thank you very much. It's been very helpful.
Okay. You're welcome, Susie. Take care. Have a good day. So, I'm an economist, so I believe in the idea of opportunity cost, right? So you really need to look into all of your costs, including your time and labor. And quite often, you know, people discount that too much. And as I've gotten older I've kind of come with the mindset of, you know, penny wise, pound foolish, right? Which is, I think it's easy to, you know, hey, I'm going to do this job to save, you know, a few dollars, and then you do it and it doesn't turn out that well. I mean, it could be plumbing, electrical, carpentry, whatever. And now as I've gotten older, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to focus on the areas that I know really well. And I'm going to let people who know these other areas focus on those for me. And it just makes my life a lot easier. So I think, again, you have to consider all the opportunity cost with any investment. And that's the thing where you think about it from an investment perspective. You know, with our firm, the value we're offering our clients is to remove the emotional decisions of changing anything or the ups and downs of the market. Or, you know, we talked about the challenges in the bond allocation for our portfolios. So we're making those changes to our client portfolios. You know, we've been underweight international for the last six or seven years. For the last couple of years, we've had no international allocation. So we make those changes for our clients. And so, and those have added value to our clients' portfolio. But, you know, it's relatively speaking, it is not the type of labor intensive thing that running a business is and or managing real estate. As far as, you know, if you have your own portfolio. So, you know, very important in anything as far as business related to kind of consider that. I want to move on to another topic with our clients. We have and I just kind of want to put this out there for the general listening audience. We have a minimum of investable assets of around $500,000. And sometimes we get questions as to why that is the case. And, you know, a couple different things. One is we do make exceptions for that minimum in particular circumstances where it still works for the individual to come on as a client. You know, again, a lot of times maybe they're about ready to retire, but they're not right there right now. Do they have that amount? Or they're in a situation where they're going to be selling a business, or what, you know, a lot of things can lead to a situation where we might make an exception to that amount. But, you know, the importance of that $500,000 is just to the extent that we spend an awful lot of time with our clients. And, you know, if we are just opening up our services to anybody, we're going to have to limit our ability to spend that time with people. And, you know, that is important to us very much with working with our clients, is make sure that, you know, for the client service team, our investment management team, our wealth advisors, that we can really dedicate that time to spending with our clients. And, you know, the one thing I will say, though, and this is for any of the listening audience, without a doubt, if you ever need help and, you know, you're below that minimum, first of all, call in, because there may be an exception we can make to work with you. But also, we will absolutely work with anybody to get them to maybe a fiduciary advisor that is able to work with them with that lower amount. There are fiduciary advisors out there that just charge an hourly fee. So it might work a little bit better for them to work with that that individual. And, you know, I'll tell you, I can't, you know, how many times we just provide free pro bono guidance to people as they call in. You know, it's something that, you know, we can't spend an awful lot of time with you, but we can spend 5 or 10 minutes with you and probably get you in a pretty good spot going forward. And, you know, that's why I feel fortunate to work at the firm that I do, because, you know, it's not something that's frowned upon. As a matter of fact, it's something that really the whole idea, whether it be clients and or anybody out there that needs guidance, is to really just take care of them and do the right thing for them. And that's something that I know that all the advisors at the firm really believe strongly in. And so I just wanted to explain that, because sometimes we get questions on that. And it is important, because, you know, to the extent that if we want to spend that time that's needed with our clients and, you know, run a business, you got to do it in a way that's profitable. But at the same time, you know, having, you know, the proper financial guidance is so important. And that's what we really view of the show. You know, our view of the show is really to kind of give back to the community and, you know, give guidance to anybody who wants is listening and really wants to, you know, be able to get fiduciary guidance, but maybe can't get access to an advisor like us. But also, you know, if you ever need any guidance, if you call into the office, we will most certainly spend a few minutes and either get you connected with the right fiduciary advisor, or we will provide that kind of pro bono guidance to really make sure that you're in a good spot. Well, folks, we're going to go to commercial break, but come back and join us as we continue the discussion. You'll listen to Let's Talk Money on News Radio WGY, 103.1 FM and 810 AM. Welcome back, folks. My name is Martin Shields, and I'm your host today for Let's Talk Money. It's great to be here with you. And we welcome back all of our weekly listeners and any new listeners. It's great to have you here. And if you have any questions, feel free to give me a call and we can chat. You can reach me at 800-825-5949. That's 800-825-5949. So let's move on to some other topics that I think are important. And these are topics that we discuss with our clients. And, you know, one of them is charitable giving and philanthropy. And, you know, I will tell you that, you know, I've married, 3 kids, and, you know, we believe very strongly in giving back to the community. And as I've mentioned before, that's something that the firm is very supportive of. You know, the firm, you know, supports a number of different charities, you know, throughout the Capital Region, and it's, you know, tens of, not hundreds of thousands of dollars, certainly over time, but in any given year that we're giving back. And I'm on a couple different nonprofit boards and spend some time doing that. So it's great that our firm is supportive of that. But from a family perspective, it's something that we think it's important. You know, we, you know, we're fortunate individuals. So you know, have our kids have access to everything from education to, you know, guidance with parents. And it's not something that we take for granted. And so we try to, you know, with our kids, both from a time and even money perspective, give them guidance as to, hey, what does it mean to be charitable? And, you know, whether it be helping out a neighbor or, you know, an elderly person at a assisted living, or, you know, a lot of times we go and volunteer at the regional food bank, where I was on the board for a number of years, We go to the Ronald McDonald House, where I'm on the board as well. And, you know, just different places where we go and spend our time with our family. But from a financial perspective, it's also important to have a plan. And, you know, really, you know, we spend the time talking about where we're going to be giving money as a family, and, you know, what that, why that's important, and how it helps these nonprofits really be able to support their mission. And I can't, to from our perspective, this is very valuable for our kids and our family, because, you know, it helps them think beyond just themselves, right? That, hey, you know, we're fortunate. You know, we have good health, good health care. We have access to food, healthy food. You know, there's all these different things that we have that, you know, we don't want them taking for granted. And, you know, one of the things that we have is a charitable fund with Charles Schwab. And all that is just a fund that you can donate money to. You could potentially, depending on how much you contribute, get a tax deduction for that, those donations. And that you can, over time, make contributions to nonprofits. They have to be 501c3 nonprofits, but you can make contributions from that charitable fund to those nonprofits at any point. And that you can also take that money that you've put in there and get it invested. And from our perspective, really, this charitable fund is something that will continue to contribute to it. And if you, one of the strategies that can be utilized now that the SALT deductions, the state and local tax deductions, have kind of been capped, one of the strategies is to pool your annual donations so that you make them large enough so that they kind of go over that threshold so you actually get the deduction for those contributions. But you put into the charitable fund, and then you can let that money grow over time. So you're going to get it invested in a diversified portfolio. And then again, whenever you want to make contributions, I'm sorry, just contributions to charities, you go ahead and just, you know, reach out to Charles Schwab. For our clients, is they reach out to us and we coordinate those distributions. And it really provides a great discussion point with our kids about, you know, how much we're going to give. And then we also talk to them about maybe there's charities they want to support. And it's really, as they've gotten older, there's, you know, some causes that they really think are important, and allows us to have that discussion about supporting them. And, you know, we'll support them through the charitable fund, but even, you know, with our kids, you know, they'll take, you know, whatever they're earning money, we always take the approach that, hey, half those dollars you can spend, the other half, let's put them into a savings bank account and or get them invested. And to the extent that there's any W-2, we put it into a Roth for them. But we also talk about them taking some of their dollars as well and contributing to the charity. And, you know, it's really, you start getting them thinking along those mindset. And, you know, you hear it, and I think it's true with research, is gratitude is a huge part of really living a positive life. If you take gratitude for what you have, and, you know, you gotta teach that sometimes to kids. And, you know, it's easy for them to kind of be focused on themselves, which, you know, it's human nature. I think even as adults, sometimes we need to kind of get some course correction and get some guidance with that. But I would really kind of encourage you to think about that from a family perspective. And if you're giving from a charity perspective, you know, also from an estate planning perspective, you know, we always tell clients, listen, if you have charitable interest, don't wait until you're dead to have those charities get those dollars, right? At the very minimum, start having conversations with those charities now to let them know that, hey, you know what? I want to let you know that I have you in our will, in our estate documents, and why that's important, so that they know that those dollars are there. And even, frankly, you know, if you're working with your advisor, start contributing while you're living. You know, it's better to support that organization and be there to see those dollars in use than wait until you're no longer on this planet. And, you know, I would encourage you to do that. So, you know, when you have, from a charitable perspective, really to have more of a plan versus just kind of winging it, of course, if that's important to you. But I want to move on to a couple different topics before we're done with the show. But if you have any questions, you can reach me at 1-800-TALK-WGY. That's 800-825-5949. So one of the things I want to talk about is, you know, we see so many small business owners who are selling their businesses. And we see some small business owners that are out there buying businesses. And I've said before, this is a year of transition. But if you're a small business owner and you think that at some point you might want to sell your business, I would strongly encourage you to start being more strategic with that. And what I mean by that is, you know, whether it's engaging, you know, with our clients, they start talking with us about that interest. And then, you know, we start making sure we line up the experts to make sure that they're in a position to sell that business in the time frame they want. Because, you know, for the most part, it's very difficult to turn around and, you know, you want to sell a business and in 2 months just sell it, right? I mean, that's, you're probably not going to get your top dollar by doing that. And if you could be more strategic, I would say the glide path for this is about 5 years, right? So it may be a little bit longer, but really the ideal time frame for this is 5 years. And what you start doing is just making sure that everything from the way that the business is structured, the way that the books are handled, the way that you understand the valuation of your company, the way that you really make sure that your employees are taken care of when you think more long term, that when you are looking to identify potential buyers of your company, that you really have a better perspective of who those buyers may be, maybe start having some of those conversations earlier. And, you know, that is just a great way to make sure that that sale of that business goes off properly, that, again, you maximize the dollars that you can get for the sale of that business, and that you really kind of think of a plan to take care of your employees, which for many people is important, taking care of their customers and their employees. So I really would kind of, you know, not, you know, think this through. Hopefully you work with a, you know, investment fiduciary like our firm, that where they can really have these types of conversations with you, because it's invaluable to really have a sounding board of a firm like ours, where you're, you know, just getting their expert guidance, and it's unbiased. That's been really valuable for our small business clients to get that perspective. So I would encourage you to reach out and do that as well. And it just helps you kind of set your mindset as you kind of go down the path to selling the business. Well, folks, it's been a great hour here with you. I hope you learned some valuable items. And I hope that you get out there and enjoy the day. Take care of the ones that you love, and that you really make sure that you take care of yourself. That's important. Talk about mental health. It's important. Well, folks, you're listening to Let's Talk Money on News Radio WGY 103.1 FM, 810 AM. Take care.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.